Okay, Mike, there's five machines rolling at your discretion. KY6-bit.
Very good. I think I'm recording as well. Very good. We have a six-pack going. Good evening. Welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain a license. The first in a series will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the technician class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. Eastern, the 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday and each Sunday evening, same time. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS, S-C-A-R-S, server at either Echolink node number 906140 or IRLP node 906140. For those who are interested in obtaining your license for the first time, please contact myself, Mike, at Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, via email at VOIP at VOIPnet.southcars1word.com. Enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connected into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in the presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at VOIPnet.southcars.com. Letting it drop. Before we start this evening's program, it should be mentioned that the material being covered is based on new Q&A pool effective July 1st, 2014. This means that this material should not be used for those that are planning to take the test prior to that date. Well, that's passed, so forget that. It should be further mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at VOIPnet.southcars.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, my name is Mike. That's Mike India Kilo Echo. Call sign is KD0CDQ, and I am the opening moderator for this session. Now, tonight we have two fine instructors. Same folks that were here Sunday night are back at us again. We have WQ1I Paul in Danbury, Connecticut. And again, we're going international with VE2MEW Bill in Peterborough, Canada. Tonight we'll start with Paul. He will start off with the questions. And let's just all listen in. I remember, they're going to do the question. They'll give the answers. Then there'll be a pause. If you have any questions, come on aboard. Come on and talk to us. This is a lively group. We want to hear your comments. And remember, there's no dumb questions, okay? Any question you might have, you know, just about any question you might have is fine. So just come aboard with the questions, and we'll be listening for that and giving you the time to do that. So, and I'm going to turn this over to Paul. WQ1I just kicking the ball from Kansas all the way across to Connecticut. What a big kick that is, but it's not a goal. Here we go. Go ahead, Paul. You're on.
Okay, Meg, thanks very much. WQ1I here in Danbury, Connecticut. You know, Mike, I had to chuckle when you said about there's no dumb questions. We've got this, you ever see these motivational posters, you know, and they have like very inspiring photographs and sayings and everything. Well, there's a company out there called Despair.com, and they make posters and things that they call demotivators. And one of my favorites is, it reads, "There are no stupid questions, but there are an awful lot of inquisitive idiots." So there you go. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. See, here's one of the inquisitive idiots right here. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the South Cars Technician Class Number 2. And I'm very happy to be here along with my partner, Bill, VE3MEW. And I'll just get myself out of trouble here and move on to the very first question, which is Tango 2 Alpha 6. What must an amateur operator do when making on-air transmissions to test equipment or antennas? Let me drop it since I was babbling. What must an amateur operator do when making on-air transmissions to test equipment or antennas? A. Properly identify the transmitting station. B. Make test transmissions only after 10 p.m. local time. C. Notify the FCC of the test transmission. Boy, that would take a while. And D. State the purpose of the test during the test procedure. Well, the answer is A. Properly identify the transmitting station. You know, we talked about this the other night, about identifying during transmissions, the importance of sending your call sign, and these identification rules apply to on-air test transmissions as well. That's not, you know, no matter how brief they might be. So if you're sending out a signal on the air, just to make sure that everything's working or tuning something or any of that stuff, even if you're not talking to someone, you need to identify your station with your call sign. Bill, VE3MEW, over to you, sir.
Okay, Paul, VE3MEW here. Just to correct Mike there, I'm not a VE2, I'm a VE3. VE2s are in Quebec there, Mike. And regarding your statement about dumb questions, I have to take disagreement with that. I have heard lots of dumb, stupid questions. And I'm very good at giving dumb, stupid answers. If you don't believe me, just ask me. I'll be happy to come up with some for you. Oh, my goodness. All right, moving along here. Enough foolishness. T2A, number 11. Which of the following is an FCC rule regarding power levels used in amateur bands under normal, non-distress circumstances? Well, you are apparently not under distress. You are reasonably normal, and you're on an amateur band. And what is your FCC regarding power levels? A. There is no limit to power as long as there's no interference with other services. Wouldn't that be lovely? No more than 200 watts PEP may be used. Up to 1500 watts PEP may be used on any amateur frequency without restriction. While not exceeding the maximum power permitted on a given band, you use the minimum power necessary to carry out the desired communication. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the answer. While not exceeding the maximum power permitted on a given band, use the minimum power necessary to carry out the desired communications. I know that's a Part 97 rule and an FCC designation there, but I can tell you, I don't think anybody does that. Most radios put 100 watts on the HF bands. Most of them do. Mine does, FT950. And when I'm on the band and I'm talking to somebody, I'll be the first one to admit that I use the full 100 watts. I never crank down the power. First of all, it doesn't even have a power limit on it. I mean, as far as the knob is concerned, I have to go in the menu, and that's a bit complicated. I might have to actually get the manual out to know how to do that. Oh, dear me. So, but anyway, that's the rule. You use the minimum power necessary. However, having said that, I do follow that rule to some extent when communicating on 2 meters and using handhelds. Mostly on a handheld, it's used to conserve battery power. I don't want to wear out my battery. There's no use kicking out 5 watts on a handheld if 1 watt will do the job. So, and there's my tinkle, so I'm just about done. Over to you, Paul, VE3MEW.
Okay, thanks, Bill. So while Bill goes to tinkle, anybody have any questions on either of those first two questions? Okay, nothing heard. So we'll move on to the next question, number 3 for the evening. Tango 2 Bravo 4 is the number of the question, and it reads as follows. Which of the following common problems might cause you to be able to hear but not access a repeater even when transmitting with the proper offset? A. Repeater receiver may require an audio tone burst for access. B. The repeater receiver may require a CTCSS tone for access. C. The repeater receiver may require a DCS tone sequence for access. Or D. All of these choices are correct. And the answer is D. All of these choices are correct. Now, the way this works is most repeaters will not pass a signal from the receiver side to the transmitter for retransmission unless it contains a special tone. That's how they control access to the machine. And I guess it also helps them keep machines that are close to each other separated as well. There's, I think, 38 different sub-audible frequencies that that can be used. Some of the terms that were in this question, CTCSS, stands for Continuous Tone Coded Squelch System. DCS stands for Digital Code Squelch. And these are all means of controlling access to the repeater. By keeping the signal on that's coming in on the receive end of the repeater from going to the transmit side, unless it's accompanied with one of those tones. Any questions on that question? I'll leave a pause here for anybody who has a question, and then Bill will pick it up back in Peterborough, Ontario, WQ1I.
RMO with a comment.
Go right ahead with your comment, please.
Hi, my name is Lyman, and I was wondering, what is a repeater?
Well, do you want to answer that question, Paul, or do you want me to confuse him with what a repeater is? Either way, go ahead, Paul.
Well, Mike, if history repeats itself, I'll give an answer, and then Gordon and or Bill will come in and correct me. But which is fine with me. A repeater is a radio receiver and transmitter. They're privately owned by ham radio operators. They generally, though not always, but they generally operate on VHF and UHF frequencies, though there are some HF repeaters out there. And what they do is you have like a repeater in your local neighborhood, high up on a hill somewhere, and with your little handheld walkie-talkie on 2 meters, you can talk to that repeater, and it takes your input signal and rebroadcasts it. Shouldn't use that word. Retransmits it at the same time, and you have the ability now to talk vast distances because it's a lot higher power than your little handheld can be. Because of its geographical location and superior antenna, it can reach a lot further than you could with your little handheld or even a portable radio that you might have in your car. So it literally takes your signal and repeats it and makes it so that many, many more people can hear you and they can communicate with you and you with them. How's that? WQ1I, over to you, Mike.
Paul, that was very well done. It's just like a repeater. You want it to go further, you shout down the hall in the school, and a guy with a bigger mouth or a bigger mouth teacher just shouts it louder yet, and so more people can hear. So a repeater repeats what it hears on a different frequency and throws it out a further distance than you can with our little mouth. So a repeater just repeats. Does that help you at all, Lyman? How's that?
A lot. I was just wondering what it was, so I get that. Right when you have the power or the frequency going to the repeater, it makes it bigger like a sound wave if you just felt the yelling in the hallway thing.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you, Mike. I just wanted to say hi to Lyman. He just got back from camp here, vacation camp. and we were scurrying to get everything together for him for the registration on the test. Sure, nice to have you here this evening, sir. And I would only add to these admirable comments on repeaters that it's a dual frequency operation, Lyman. There is normally an offset frequency for people coming into the repeater. Like on 2 meters, it's generally about 600 kc remove. And then the actual transmit frequency of the computer, or of the repeater, excuse me. So what happens is you squawk into your handheld or into your radio on one frequency, it is received at the repeater location and transmitted out to everybody else on another frequency, Lyman, over.
I get that. That was very helpful to me.
Okay. Again, welcome. Who do I turn it here to, Mike? Back to you, back to Paul, back to Bill. Over.
We're heading north of the border, down Peterborough way. So, Bill, take it away.
Yeah, this is me, 3MEW. I believe I have a little clarification thing here to make based on one of Paul's remarks. I need to explain, I guess, what this thing about the tinkle is. I don't want anybody getting the wrong idea here. based on the advice of, I think it was you, Mike, I changed the timing on my Echolink here down to the 180 seconds, and which is shorter than it used to be. And when I get down to a few seconds from the end, it, no other name for I can describe it with, it tinkles at me. So that's my description of the tinkle. It's not what you were thinking, Paul. So anyway, oh my goodness. Okay, I'll carry on here with enough of my foolishness. Which of the following methods is encouraged by the FCC when identifying your station when using phone? In other words, for phone is voice. A, use of phonetic alphabet. B, send your call sign in CW as well as voice. C, repeat your call sign 3 times. D, increase your signal to full power when identifying. That's one idea, I guess. But anyway, the proper answer is use of phonetic alphabet. Oftentimes if I say B3MEW, I'll rattle it by pretty quick. And if you're not prepared, or if you don't know me, or you're not used to the voice or the call sign, you might miss it. But if I say Victor Echo 3, Mike Echo Whiskey, that's a little bit more clear. Especially when you're talking international and you're working contests and so on and so forth. And there you go. Any questions on that? I'd be happy to answer them. Obviously, you're going to learn the phonetic alphabet, and you may have questions about it. I know up here on our exam, there's questions on the phonetic alphabet, and you're expected to know it. So, not that hard to memorize it if you play with it. Okay, I think that is all I have at the moment. Over to you, Paul, V3MEW.
Comment from CDQ. Lyman, you can either memorize the phonetic alphabet, or you can do a tour in the Navy. And when you come out, you will know the phonetic alphabet. Okay, over to Paul. Go right ahead.
RMO with a quick comment.
Go right ahead with your comment, please.
Thank you, sir. Just wanted to, two things. Number one, Lyman, there was a great question, super good question on the repeaters, or about asking about what a repeater is. My wife's kind of in the same position. She's getting her license. She's going to attempt to get her license. So she had a very similar question in mind, too. So you asked the right question. Did a great job there. And secondly, as far as the phonetic alphabet goes, you can always, because my memory's so bad, you know, I keep a little card with it right next to my rig. So, you know, you can, a lot of places where you can download that, too. So if you're forgetful like I am, you can always have a little cheat sheet. So they're readily available. All right, back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
V3MEW.
Go right ahead, Bill.
Well, that's great, Gary. That's wonderful. There's just one little problem, sir. You're not going to be allowed to take that into the exam with you. And you can't use that in the exam. So you're going to have to rely on what's between your ears, that gray matter. So if somebody asks you what on the exam, for example, like we have up here, you might be asked to give the phonetic alphabetic word for L. You better remember it's Lima, because you're going to have a choice, obviously. And if you don't remember, cheat sheet's not going to be there to help you. So just my comment. But it's not too hard to learn, really. It's kind of fun. Where am I? Oh, okay. Back to Paul, V3MEW.
Okay, Bill, thank you. WQ1I here, or otherwise known as Whiskey Quebec 1 India. There you go. All right, next question. Is Tango 2 Charlie 5? Which of the following describes the Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, otherwise known as RACES? A. A radio service using amateur frequencies for emergency management or civil defense communications. B. A radio service using amateur stations for emergency management or civil defense communications. C. An emergency service using amateur operators certified by a civil defense organization as being enrolled in that organization. Or D. All of these choices are correct. And this is another one of Kathy's favorite answers, D. All of these choices are correct. So we're talking about, in this case, RACES, which I believe is how it's pronounced. Mike can let me know if that's wrong. And you've got basically RACES and ARES are the two largest amateur radio emergency response organizations. RACES is a special part of the amateur service, which has been created by the FCC to promote communications assistance to local, state, or federal government emergency management agencies during civil emergencies. So that's the question. That's the answer. All of the answers were correct in that particular one. Any questions? Ask Mike. He knows all about this stuff. WQ1I. Paul's give a break, and then Bill can pick it up if no one jumps in.
This is CDQ. So, Lyman, just put it in the back of your head that RACES is a state organization, each state. So RACES is state. Just put that in the back of your mind, because that's a question somewhere on this exam. Okay, Paul, you dropped it, and we're going over to Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I'm familiar with most of that stuff as well. I used to be an emergency coordinator up here for Amateur Radio Emergency Service here in town, and we have a new chap very ably looking after it now. And I know that south of the border, there are courses can be taken to get yourself certified and properly trained for these positions, same as we have here. And then you're issued identification with your picture on it, and you're all set to go. Some of the stuff you do have to do up here, you have, for example, go to the police station and swear an oath of secrecy, because our amateur radio station at the police station is situated right in the same room with the 911 emergency calls. So we have to be, when we leave that room, whatever happens in there stays there. It doesn't go anywhere else. That's very important. And we have, of course, we have stations at the EMS place where the ambulances are stored and respond from, and plus the fire station and so on and so forth. And how dumb as it may sound, the reason for all that is simply because all those different agencies in an emergency cannot communicate with each other. They're all on different frequencies, different types of radios, and it's quite comical when you think about it, but the police can't talk to the fire can't talk to the ambulance can't talk to who knows where, and oh boy. Anyway, enough of my babbling about that question. We'll move along here. Buy me a nickel so I don't get tinkled. Okay, T2C09. Are amateur station control operators ever permitted to operate outside the frequency privileges of their license class? So you want to think about that for a minute. Are amateur station control operators, that would be you, at your station or another station, ever permitted to operate outside the frequency privileges of their license class? A. No. B. Yes, but only when part of a FEMA emergency plan. C, yes, but only when part of a race's emergency plan. D, yes, but only if necessary in situations involving the immediate safety of human life or protection of property. Interesting to see that protection of property one in there. Anyway, the answer is D, yes, but only if necessary in situations involving the immediate safety of human life or protection of property. So that's the answer of that one, being able to operate outside the normal frequency privileges of your license class. I think that's it. Check my notes, all looks clear. So back to you, Paul V, through MEW.
It's CDQ here with a comment. Lyman, when we talk about classes, there's three different levels currently in the United States. It's the technician, which is the license you're going to be getting. The next level is general, like a general in the Army. And then the third level is extra. So it's technician, general, and extra. Maybe Bill will share with us, is it the same in Canada? Would you tell us, please?
Okay, Michael, this is V3MEW. We have basically two license classes in Canada. But the first one, which is called basic, is broken up into two separate components. And what you get as a privilege is going to depend on the mark you get. If you get between 70, you have to get 70 to pass, period, end of line. And if you get between 70 and 80, you get just basic. That's it. There are certain things you're restricted from doing. For example, some of the bands on the HF bands and the operating modes. If you get 80 or above, you get all of the privileges that there are, with the exception of what comes with the advanced. Now, basically, as far as operating modes and power levels is concerned, you're not going to gain anything there by going with the advanced. You got it all if you got basic with honors, which is 80 or above. The only thing the advanced allows you to do in Canada is to, first of all, build equipment yourself, which is going to transmit a signal on the air, such as if you want to construct your own linear amplifier, your own transmitter, and so on. That's the first thing. You're not allowed to do that with just basic. You want to build equipment other than what you bought up at the radio show or the radio place, you're going to have your advanced license. There's good reasons for that. I'm sure you could probably figure them out. The second privilege you will get with your advanced is you get to sponsor and or install a repeater. No repeater up here can be sponsored or installed or operated or set up by an individual unless they have their advanced license. So when the Peterborough Amateur Radio Club needed a sponsor for their local repeaters, they came and asked me if I would do that because the older fellow that was doing it before was retiring. So that's why my name is on the Peterborough repeaters in Canada as the sponsor. So whatever comes out of them is my problem. It's my responsibility. So if you get on there and act up and cuss and swear and play music, I'm in trouble. They're going to come to me first. So there you go. We talked about that last night. So that's the only privileges you get from going from a basic to advanced. You want all the operating modes, all the operating frequencies on HF, VHF, UHF from 160 on up. All you got to do is get above 80 or above on the exam. So that's it. Paul, V3MEW.
Can I say something or no?
Lyman, you certainly can, and you can always say something. Just give us a break in between. Yes, go ahead, Lyman, with your statement, your question.
The technician license, can I still communicate on the radios that I would be given by someone?
Yes, in the United States, when you have the technician license, you can work on what's called 2 meter, a very high frequency, and you can work also on ultra high frequency, which is normally what you see in a handheld radio and in other radios too. It just excludes the high frequency, you know, what people call shortwave radio. There's only some frequencies. There are some you can use on HF, but it's mostly when you get the technician license, yes, you can use the radio somebody gives you. It's usually VHF or VHF and UHF. It's a very high frequency or ultra high frequency. That's the words they use. yes, you can use the radio somebody gives you. There's just some restrictions to some of the shortwave, which is high-frequency radios. I hope that covered it.
Contact.
Yes, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I'm looking at the at this chart from ICOM as the USA Amateur Radio HF and UHF VHF band plan on it, and for novice or technician voice in the HF bands it's showing 28.0 to 28.5. That's on the 10 meter band. It's not showing anything on any of the other bands, but they show some CW but not the voice. CW on 15 and where else now? On 40 and on 80, but they're not showing anywhere else. But there's certainly a lot of blue with the little lines going through it showing up there on the UHF VHF band plan that they can use all the way up from 6 meters and 2 and on up there. That's what it's showing anyway. V3MEW, back to you, Mike.
6 Victor with a question.
On the internet, there's a free charts that you can download that show the frequencies that amateur radio operators can use in the United States, and it also, by the color coding, shows you which ones the technicians, the generals, and the extras can use. As you can probably figure, the extra can splat all over the approved frequencies we have, and the general is somewhere in the middle, and the technician is limited, a little section, but there is a little bit that you can use. I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I know some technicians that I think they get very busy on, is it 160 or something? They tell me they get busy on something. I don't remember what that is. But we don't want to hold up on here any longer. I know Paul's tail's a wagon, and Paul's ready to go with his next question. So, Paul, take it away.
Mike, I don't have a tail, and it's not wagging. But other than that, you got it absolutely correct. WQ1I here. And the next question is Tango 3 Alpha 7. What type of wave carries radio signals between transmitting and receiving stations? I think I picked this question last year and I had to do it again. A. Electromagnetic. B. Electrostatic. C. Surface acoustic. Or D. Magnetostrictive. Oh, God, I love that. Magnetostrictive. The answer is A, electromagnetic. Okay, what are we talking about? We're talking about radio waves, the actual wave that is being generated and sent out from your antenna to communicate with another, with a receiver somewhere. It is an electromagnetic wave. It has components, two different field components. One is electric, the other magnetic, and they, I do believe, lie at 90 degrees to each other. So you've got both components, magnetic and electric, and it's an electromagnetic wave. And we'll talk a little bit more about that two questions from now. So what type of wave carries radio signals between transmitting and receiving stations? A, electromagnetic waves. Any questions before Bill picks it up?
6 Victor, sir.
Go?
Leave the house and never return? Thanks, Paul. KY6V. I wanted to go back to Lyman for just a moment. Lyman, have you been given some equipment, and can you tell us what it is, sir? Over.
Well, I haven't been given equipment, but my friend Jim, the next door neighbor, we went to this class, I can't remember, where there was a big competition, and it was in Orange Park, and they had an Orange Park amateur radio club, and they were using a lot of equipment, but I can't remember all the names.
Okay. Well, Lyman, you're in good hands with Jim. Jim and I have been communicating quite a bit here since this class was starting to be formulated. And he can answer that question for you. Your technician license, once you pass it, and I have no doubts that you will pass it, restricts you to certain operating bands and certain operating frequencies. So depending on the equipment that you might acquire, it may be out of your license area. But Jim can help you with that, Lyman. Over.
He can, all right. Yeah, I know that.
Okay, very good. That's all I've got. Bill, with a pause, in case there's somebody else, please.
RMO?
Go ahead, RMO. Go ahead now, please.
Thank you, sir. Hey, Lyman, and anybody else that's in the conference group, I just tried this and it apparently worked. So I put a copy of the ARRL band plan chart as a text download in the chat for Skype. So try to open it up, and it's all yours for free. Back to the net, KC2RMO.
Yeah, that's on the website also, Gary. Thank you.
Hey, Gary, thank you for that. And Lyman, I always keep one of those sheets posted in my ham shack right next to my radios. It's just hanging there on a hook. It's just hanging there on a Snoopy hook, actually. The Snoopy the dog, you know. It's hanging on a little hook, so I make sure I don't creep out of the band, because I have an older high-frequency radio, and I can actually transmit and receive outside the legal band, so I have to watch it. I don't slip out there, and you don't want to slip out there either. Okay, we're going to give it over to Bill. Bill, take it away.
Yeah, this is me, 3MEW. Nice to hear that young fella come in there. Reminds me of that other chap that did our nets from time to time from Colorado. I forget his name and his call now, but haven't heard him or heard anything about him for a while. I hope he's okay and still active, hopefully. But that was always refreshing when you get younger people involved. As for Paul's last question there, I was sitting here very anxiously waiting to see if we were going to get a description of magnetostrictive. But, oh boy, unfortunately that didn't happen. But, oh well, maybe next year. Well, I could see Paul now frantically bringing up magnetostrictive in his Google, trying to figure out what it is. Oh, my. Which part of the atmosphere enables the propagation of radio signals around the world? T3A11. Which part of the atmosphere enables the propagation of radio signals around the world? Well, if you were up here listening to the to the 2-meter repeater, you'd often hear me talking about sunspots and coronal mass ejections and solar flares and so on. That's a favorite topic of ours up here among a bunch of us, because we want those things to happen. And what happens is that's going to ionize the atmosphere. So, having said that, here are the answers, your choices for that question. A, the stratosphere. B, the troposphere. C, the ionosphere. And D, the magnetosphere. And the correct answer for the question is C, the ionosphere. We want the sun to send out some flares. Not really bad ones, mind you, because that's really going to be the opposite thing that happens. And we're not going to like what happened if we really get a bad flare and a coronal mass ejection. We want nice ones, medium-sized flares. And we want that to ionize the atmosphere so that when I crank up 10 meters, my signals will have no trouble hopping around the world from here to Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii, Alaska, Germany, anywhere. So that's what we're looking for. All right. Any questions on? Of course, there are charts you can get easily on the internet too, showing you the, and this, some of this information is in the amateur radio handbook, which many hams have, showing you the various levels, the heights of these various levels of the atmosphere, and they each have particular jobs and what they do, and so on, and why they're named what they are, and where the airplanes fly, and so on. There's my tinkle, 18 seconds. Paul, VE3MEW, back to you, sir.
This is CDQ. I believe it's AC0XR. AC0XR, do you have a question or a comment? Please go now.
Yeah, info on that, Mike, KY6V.
Yes, I'm not quite sure. I don't see AC0XR on my listing here, but I didn't know what's going on. Go ahead, Gordon.
Okay, let me try and put it in perspective. Bill up there in Canada was talking about a chap that used to run our nets on Saturday from Colorado. Denver, or just outside of Denver. His call was AC0XR. Alpha Charlie Zero, X-Ray Romeo. And his name was Brady. And I think where the confusion came in here is Kathy was trying to say that Brady was Brady. Mike, KY6V, over.
Okay, Gordon, thank you for the clarification. And speaking of clarification, we're going to Paul, the Paul without a tail. Go right ahead, Paul. You tell a lot of tales, though.
I do, Mike, and I have a lot of tales. I just don't wag them. But next question. T3B2, Tango 3, Bravo 2. What property of a radio wave is used to describe its polarization? A, the orientation of the electric field. B, the orientation of the magnetic field. C, the ratio of the energy in the magnetic field to the energy in the electric field. Or D, the ratio of the velocity to the wavelength. Wow. Thankfully, the answer is A, the orientation of the electric field. Alright, so what the heck are we talking about here? Well, as I promised, this is kind of an expansion on the question that I read previously about electromagnetic waves. You've got a radio wave. It's an electromagnetic wave. It has an electrical and a magnetic component, field, I should say. And these two fields are at 90 degrees angles to each other. So when one of them is, let's just say, for lack of a better description, up and down, that would be vertical. If the other one is 90 degrees out of phase with that, then that would have to be horizontal. So one of these components is going to be vertical at some point, and one is going to be horizontal, but which one of these components are the ones that we use to describe the polarity of that particular radio wave? And the answer is A, it's the orientation of the electric field that we use to describe it. So when we say that this radio antenna is horizontally polarized, it's going to put out a wave where the electric component of that electromagnetic wave is horizontal relative to the other. Whew. Any questions about that? We'll leave the big pause, and then Bill will pick it up. WQ1I.
This is CDQ to Lyman. This is a good time to insert that this electromagnetic wave goes at the speed of light. A voice goes at the speed of light, not at the speed of sound, but the speed of light. Thank you to Mr. Maxwell in about 1865. He's the one that discovered that electricity and magnetism do a trick together. Okay, let's go over to Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, without any further ado, although we are having fun, T3B, number 10. What frequency range is referred to as HF? A, 300 to 3,000 megahertz, 30 to 300 megahertz, 3 to 30 megahertz, and 300 to 3,000 kilohertz. And very simply, the correct answer is C, 3 to 30 megahertz. We do jump a little bit of a lower frequency in there, which includes 160 meter band, slightly slower than 3 megahertz, but the correct answer is 3 to 30 megahertz. And there's not a whole lot to say about that other than just read it and try and remember it. That's all we can say about that question. V3MEW, over to you, Paul.
Okay, Bill, thank you very much. And, wow, lo and behold, we're coming to my last question, next to the last for the class tonight. The time has flown by here. I'm just having too much fun. The question is number Tango 3, Charlie 4. Which of the following propagation types is most commonly associated with occasional strong over-the-horizon signals on 10, 6, and 2 meter bands? A, backscatter. B, sporadic E. D, C, D-layer absorption. And D, gray line propagation. And the answer is B, sporadic E. Now, let me just drop it a second here. Now, what this question is really talking about is a type of propagation that occurs, and the reason it's called E, they're calling it sporadic E, is that it bounces off of the E layer of the ionosphere. At certain times of the year, it's more prevalent than others. But in terms of remembering this question, I think it just hit me while I was reading it, frankly, is when you see the question reads, which of the following propagation types is most commonly associated with occasional strong over the horizon? Occasional. That means it doesn't happen all the time. It happens occasionally. Hence, it is sporadic. And I think that is a really good clue to remembering the answer to this question. Occasionally strong over the horizon signals, sporadic E. Answer B. Any questions or additions? WQ1I.
Sierra United November with just a comment.
I bet you're going to do the ABCDs. Go right ahead, Kathy.
Well, thank you for that, Mike. Actually, yes, I wanted to first of all welcome Lyman. He and I had a great conversation the other night, and Stephanie, and you, Jim, of course, and you, Gary, and anyone else that's connected. But just want to encourage each and every one of you, when you see these alpha designators, the A, B, C, and D, do not memorize them in that order. If you want to memorize, try to memorize something in the question with something in the answer. We've talked about, and I think Mike talked about sporadic, maybe there was something in the question that gave you the clue for that. But don't memorize it A, B, C, D, because those VEs change those questions. They change them around. So we want to encourage that to each and every one of you to actually just, if you want to memorize, look at something in the question and something in the answer. I wanted to say hi to everyone this evening as you're listening to the course. This went fast this evening, Bill and Paul, but it's been a great session and I've enjoyed the humor. So I'm going to turn it back to you, Paul, and you can go from there.
This is CDQ, and Stephanie and Lyman will remember that in school sometimes the teachers change the answers around so you can't copy from the dude sitting next to you, you know. The smart blonde-haired girl that's sitting next to you and always knows the answers, you copy her paper and you mess up. Because sometimes the teachers will do that. They'll switch the answers around in the multiple choice. So it's the same thing here. They switch it around. Okay, we can go back to Paul. It's actually Bill's turn, but whoever wants to go next. Let's give it over to Bill so we can do his last question. Over.
Okay, this is me, 3MEW. The next question is T3, Charlie, Oscar 5. Which of the following effects might cause radio signals to be heard despite obstructions between the transmitting and receiving stations? A couple of several ideas joined together there. Which of the following effects might, focus on that word might, cause radio signals to be heard despite obstructions between the transmitting and receiving stations? Words like those are ones that you need to pick up on right away when you read the question and say, oh, those are hints, those are clues. Okay, A, knife edge diffraction. B, Faraday rotation. C, quantum tunneling. D, Doppler shift. Well, I know what Doppler shift is. And quantum tunneling is that thing in that underground there where they send that thing around that big beam over in France somewhere, smashing atoms, trying to make a black hole to destroy the planet. Oh, well, never mind all that. The proper answer is knife edge diffraction. So I can't speak also to the how the questions are chosen and the answers chosen south of the border, but I can tell you up here, any of us that have written the exams for the Government of Canada, and I'm one of those people that has done that. They send us a course. We have to take a course on how to do that. And they give us specific instructions and training on the psychology of questions and answers and so on. And it's an interesting study. I'm going to buy a nickel here. Here in Canada, we are told that when we pick the answers, one of the answers must be absolutely correct. That's the one they're looking for. And the exact opposite must be true for one of the other answers. It must be totally out in the middle of Kansas somewhere and have nothing to do with the question in the first place. If you pick that one, you're not even in this in the same planet. And the other two are varying degrees between, kind of looks like it might be correct, and, oh, that's got to be a little bit weird, so we're not picking quantum tunneling. So that's how things are laid out up here on the questions in the Canadian exams. I can't speak for how they're done down there because I've never done it. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. I tried to put a little humor, a little fun in it because this stuff is rather dry and not all that exciting. And hopefully it was made it interesting. B3MEW, over to you, Mike. KD0CDQ.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Six Victor.
Thanks, Mike. KY6V here. I just need to ask you this question, Professor Bill. You know, I've been around as long as dirt has. And when I saw this question, when you guys came up with it, I have never heard before in many, many years, knife edge diffraction. You know, I can bounce a signal off of a 10-story building glass window. I can bounce a signal off the building itself. But where the heck did this knife come into, Bill? Over.
Well, first of all, I have to plead complete innocence on this. This was not the question I chose. This is the question that Paul chose. So I'm going to make, other than looking it up on Google, which I could do, I have a bit of an idea what it is. I have a bit of an idea what it's all about there. Is the, when they talk about the knife edge, they talk about straight up and down edge of the edge of a building in a community such as the edge of a skyscraper and so on. It could also be a cliff edge, I suppose, if it was high enough, such as the Scarborough Bluffs. But anyway, to really put the needle in and twist it where it's supposed to be, I would defer over to Mr. WQ1I. I'm sure he has this all laid out very accurately and neatly and tidily, Gord. So I'm gonna be nasty here and pass the buck. WQ1I, V3MEW.
V3MEW, WQ1I. Thank you, Bill. Okay, now everybody pay attention here. And I'm going to tell you everything I know about Knife Edge. And it was a fantastic song on Emerson, Lake & Palmer's first album. It's just great stuff. As far as the question here, I have no idea. I only researched the answers to my own questions. Because I figured, you know, Bill knows everything. First of all, they got to learn a heck of a lot more up in Canada than we do down here in the States, okay? And they are held to higher standards because they got to get a lot more right in terms of percentage on these questions. So I figured if anybody, was just going to throw out an answer to this one, Bill was the man for the job. So there you go. And I'm just going to drop it right here, and anybody who wants it can pick it up. I'm not going to throw it to anybody. WQ1I dropping it.
Oh, Paul. I feel so humble. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for that vote of confidence in me. But I need to instruct you right now. And nobody else listen to this, okay? This is just between me and Paul. I don't know everything. There's a great deal I don't know. And the older I get, the more I'm finding out I don't know. But I do remember coming across that knife edge diffraction one time. I thought it was kind of interesting. And I read a paragraph or two about it. But that was it had to be 2 or 3 years ago. Tabby, what do you want? Tabitha's up on my lap here, and she's demanding my attention. Oh, pussycat. She's flicking her tail in my face, and now she's getting to walk across my keyboard. Oh, okay. Gord, I'm sure that was not satisfactory for you, but I'm kicking it back to you anyway. All I can say, folks, read the questions over and just try and remember knife edge diffraction that goes with that question. And I guess you'll find out what it is all about when the next time you talk to Gord, V3MEW.
This is KD0CD2. Now, Stephanie and Lyman, I'll echo what Bill says. None of us know it all. And I've never seen this before, this knife edge diffraction. And I would have to reason out each of those answers to find this one, because I know what the other three selections are. I didn't know what a knife edge diffraction was, so I'd have to do that by deduction. But maybe, I know Gord's probably got this thing down, but that was the first time I've seen that. But yeah, you'll find that a lot in ham radio, a lot of things that are very peculiar, and there's a history behind them, but not everybody knows what the history was. Okay, anybody else have a comment? Please go now.
V3MEW.
And after I came out of camp, I was so excited to talk to you guys, because it was my first time here. And so thank you very much.
V3MEW.
Go ahead, Bill. Now, you notice, Lyman, what we're doing. Because I'm net control, they keep echoing off of me. They have to come through me. That's a net controller. Everything goes through the net control. That's why they're doing that. Okay, there you go. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, Mike is the man in charge here. He's trying to keep things on the straight and narrow, cut down on the confusion and the chaos. But my question is for you, Mike, or for Gord. Would I be correct in assuming that there is a study guide that you people have? I don't think I have it, a copy of it, by the way. But it seems to me, I know we have them up here. We have study guides that you have material. It's been prepared, and explanations for the questions and other associated material. I'm assuming there is a study guide that these people can work from, and I'm also going to make the big jump and the leap and say that knife edge diffraction question would be mentioned or covered in a paragraph somewhere in the study guide. Am I correct, Mike? Go ahead.
Yes, there is a study guide, and Stephanie, you probably can get it from Gary, but Lyman, if you have a pencil handy, I'll give you the name of the book. This book is put out by the ARRL. They have a book for technician, for general, and for extra. See, the price is probably on the book here somewhere. Because I teach the classes live, I have the book. But I have the old book. But it's called the ARRL. That's ARRL, three letters, HAM, H-A-M, radio, license, L-I-C-E-N-S-E, manual, M-A-N-U-A-L. I'm not going to give you the number of the book because it's the new one just came out July 1. But here's something interesting, guys. I look in this book to find out more information on the answers, and even though the questions changed July 1st, the information is in the old book. I have not found a question yet where the answer was not previously printed in an older book. They're throwing these sub-elements around, like a fixed sub-element may become a three sub-element. They're just throwing them around. I didn't look up this question on knife edge diffraction, but I'm going to look it up. Yeah, there is a book. And you can get it by getting on the ARRL website and look for the book. It's right there, and they can mail it to you. Or you may be able to buy it in a local store. Some libraries have them, but they won't have the new book, because the new book just popped out. Anyone else have a comment? Like, Gordon, do you have a comment you'd like to make? Oh, okay, there it is. Kathy suggests you go to the website. You go to our website, and you look on there, and that'll give you probably the tracker to get hold of a book. Because Gordon West also has good books, too. That's another publisher besides the ARRL of these technician study guides. Anyone have a comment they'd like to make about study books, study guides?
Well, I do have a comment about that, but I'm not sure if it's leaning towards that. But just to make it clear to me, what is the FCC?
Now, that's going to be a question on the test that you may get. That's the Federal Communication Commission. Federal Communication Commission, FCC. That's what they are. Over.
That helps.
Six vector, sir. Six vector, Mike. Yeah, I'm not sure if you're having problems out there in Kansas or not. Boy, I love that comment about Bill cracking down on the state of Kansas. M-E-W. Do I have it, Michael, please? Over. All right. I'm going to see if I've got it. Stand by one, please, everybody. Apparently, Mike's having some receive problems or something. KY6V down here in Central Florida. First thing I wanted to respond to you, Bill. Thank you for that comment. We do have a study guide. It is posted on our website in the tutorial information for this technician class. I am also going on record to oppose a little bit on what Mike has said. We have run into trouble through the years when people are using other publications. And they're all good, but, you know, like Gordon West, ARRL, so on and so forth. Please use the information that we have posted on our website, the question pool, the study guide, and the other information that's posted there so that we all stay in sync. All magazines cannot pull it all together at the same time and at the same place. And we have had problems through the years where somebody was using some other reference material with the questions supposedly entered, and they were different than the question orientation that we show in our question pool. So be very, very, very careful about that. Kathy, I'm going to send it over to you because I think you wanted to get in there, and we'll figure out what's happening with Mike. K6SUN, go ahead.
All right, this is Kilo 6, Sierra United, November, and I'm not sure why he's not responding, but I do want to emphasize just what Gordon has said to everyone. Do not go to ARRL.net. Check out our website. We have all the information there, and that is where we want you to go. We have all the course material. We have the study guide. We have the course itself. That is what we're working from. We do not want you going to other sites. So I hope I'm not being too strong here, Gordon, but I do want to emphasize we don't want anyone going to ARRL.net to find any information, to check on anything. That's why we are here tonight. That's why our instructors are here. They spend time with us each and every session. Paul and Bill were here tonight to spend an hour with us tonight, and on Sunday, Gordon and I will be there on next Sunday, next Tuesday, and we are giving you this information, and we don't want you to go to other sites. I'm just simply going to say that. I'm not sure what's wrong with Mike at this point, but, you know, any comments from you, either Bill, if you're still there, or Mike, or you, Gordon, but I am very definite that I want no one going to ARRL. I want them on our website. So, any comments anywhere this evening? And especially I want to say a thank you to you, Stephanie, you, Gary, and you, Lyman, this evening for being here.
I got that really clear, and my mom, I printed this all the tutorials, I printed the whole question thing, and it's all in my big notebook that I strapped together.
That's great, Lyman. You know, I just want to emphasize, guys and gals, that we've been running these courses for Southcars for a number of years. And we have really run into Donnybrooks when people are using different reference material than what we have stated in our tutorials. You know, they're way out in outer space someplace and confused because what we're saying and what they're reading don't equate. So please be careful in that respect. Mike, are you back with us? KY6V, over.
Yes, this is KD0CDQ. I was checking into an Aries net at the same time that I guess I didn't hear you speaking. But I want to get I want to get Stephanie and Lyman and anyone else ready for next Sunday. Next Sunday, which is the 27th of July, we're going to be in section T4. They call them sub-elements. We'll be in the Technician 4 section. A and B will be covering, and you'll have two fine instructors, who, as Kathy has just said. Kathy, who is call sign is K6SUN, will be instructing, along with Gordon, who is KY6Victor. So they'll be the two instructors next Sunday and the following Tuesday. So if you want to get a jump ahead for Sunday, look at Technician Sub-Element 4. And for Tuesday, it would be Sub-Element 5. So this was the only session where we had to do T3 and T2 together in order to fit them into the time that we had. So next Sunday, T4 with Kathy and Gordon, and they'll be back again on Tuesday. So that's the plan. That's what's coming up here next. Anyone have any questions or any comments? This is your chance. This is KD0CDQ, throwing it open to the floor. Anybody with a comment? And I don't know, Gordon, if you want to cut the recording off now or do you want to get the comments in as well? Back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, let's get any comments in. Just give me 30 seconds to pull the pin, Mike, over.
If everyone will be quiet, Gordon will take the 5 recordings off.